There you are, and here we are, and welcome back to another edition of Secrets of the Super Rich. You know, one of the biggest concerns facing families today, affluent families today, is how to manage their wealth so that they achieve all of their financial goals. And I mean, all of them. And that includes some of these. And you might fall into kind of these categories of interest. Continuing to grow your wealth as it's transferred to your heirs, right? Aligning the use of that wealth with the values and ideals that are important to you and your family. And protecting that wealth from creditors and others who might seek to unjustly take it, right? Now, because these are all important issues, and there are really important people involved in all of this, and that means your family members, the best place really to start is to make sure that your family members are all engaged and all on the same page. They're all involved. And because everybody's got a little skin in the game, they need to have some kind of a say, or at least have an appreciation of what's going on and understand it and be in agreement. And for this reason, a family constitution can be a great way to get the ball rolling on this and make sure that everybody's in kind of in perfect alignment and sync, right? And to tell us a little bit about that is somebody that we call on month after month because he's the man with some answers here. He's had this stuff figured out because he's got himself skin in the game, talking to his own clients as he's done for so many years. Mr. Vince Annable, he is founder and CEO of VFO Advisory Group. Vince Annable in Scottsdale, I got to imagine it's a beautiful spring day there. How are you, sir?
It's great, and my allergies are blooming.
Fantastic. I'm so happy for you, and congratulations to your allergies as well.
Yes.
Vince, we'll try to get through this as best we can, and then you'll have to go and probably pop some Benadryl or whatever it is that you do after that. But let's go ahead and let's dive right into it. Family constitution. Now, even I am not really super familiar with this concept, but in your experience, what kind of unique challenges arise when families with wealth attempt to work together to manage their assets? What have you seen?
Well, of course, when you have wealth and you have affluence, guess what else you have?
Issues.
You have issues that come up in getting everyone to be in agreement,
yeah.
Especially when you've got multifamilies, especially if it multi-generational, I should say, and if there's a family business or two family businesses, depends on the amount of the wealth. But all of those different things can come up and cause and create resentments, arguments, disagreements, and especially when you have multi-generational, because you may have a 20-year-old or a 22-year-old that has inherited a couple of $100 million or $10 million or $5 million. And the agreements that are being asked of the paternal founders of this family that created all the wealth, their views of life and liberty and all things in this new economy are going to be many times totally different. So what needs to happen when all these decisions need to be made is they need to get everybody together and create some kind of an agreement where the family constitution comes in. You want people to just sit down, involve the different family members, and start putting together an outline of what that family constitution might look like so that you can mitigate issues in the future.
Yeah. And so, as you've pointed out, Vince, and you've pretty much provided us with the evidence again, you know, some of the biggest arguments disputes that families have do center around money. And that's the wealthiest and poorest among us. The same thing is true. But because we're talking about secrets of the super rich, obviously we're focused on those affluent families today and about these types of issues and concerns. Are there any issues in particular that you have seen that tend to come up more often with among families with significant assets? Any that you can share that really you've seen just come up time and time again?
Well, a couple of things, Jeff. One, depends on the amount of the assets, the whether or not they happen to be in a business together, whether or not there are family members who own part of the business but are not actively engaged in the management. Sometimes you start getting this wealth commingled with different types of legal structures. You've got multi-generational trusts. So the family members who may feel wronged in some way may take some kind of legal action. So now you've got a legal dispute going on between family members, which really does jeopardize what's going to be happening with the end result and what that might do to the family finances. You could be risking a great deal of the assets of this family by having an interfamily lawsuit.
So then I guess the question is, what can families do to kind of create that harmony that's necessary in order to smooth things over and get everybody on the same page where their attitudes and their wealth are in alignment fence?
Well, that's where the family constitution comes in. It can be an effective tool because you're sitting down, putting together an outline, everybody's agreeing on in the beginning. So you've now got something you can reach back to when there are disagreements and say, hey, this is what we all agreed to. This is what it looks like. And it can help solve issues in the future by having these family constitutions that are all put together. Because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. People don't get along sometimes. Disputes come up. One of the biggest things people in this world fight about is love and money. Well, in this case, it's going to be lack of love and worried about the money. So a family constitution definitely is a great way to go for these families.
Give us some sense, if you can, Vince, about how it is that these family constitutions do promote better family relationships, because let's face it, sometimes a simple discussion or a conversation over a cup of coffee or a meal isn't always effective in doing that. But let's talk about a family constitution and how that actually works to bring people together.
Well, it definitely is one of the secrets of the super rich, because a family constitution is going to start by recognizing that there is and can be issues within all families. The family members will agree and even fight, disagree and fight. So family constitutions seek to do what they want to spell out specific ways that a family can effectively address conflicts that are almost certainly going to show up at some point over time. And unfortunately, across these multiple generations, as more and more people start becoming of age and entering in. So one of the biggest goals of a family constitution is prevent the types of family conflicts that can create this problem animosity that really tear families apart, which causes you to be subject to losing a great deal of assets within the family fortune. They're designed with a detail on how the family will deal with conflict and dissent in the future. That way they have, again, this roadmap, this agreement they all had in the family that they can come back to. And it's a great starting point to try to bring people back and get into agreement. So the whole point of the family constitution is to head off issues in the future, conflicts, and to get these people communicating. Because the worst thing in the world with these family issues is as soon as everybody quits talking and they start calling other advisors, they start calling their attorneys, that's when problems start coming up.
Yeah, I'll say. And we've seen this sort of thing happen, obviously. And then it takes a long period of time to try to recover after something like that happens. And just to try to earn people's trust back is a very, very difficult thing to do. And especially among families with a lot of assets where there's some built up animosity. So it would seem, Vince, like many other things in life, just getting started is really important in sitting down to draft that constitution. So how would a family go about doing that? How do they sit down and go about drafting a family constitution that achieves those types of goals and outcomes that we talk about?
Well, they're going to sit down, and we'll probably talk about this again with some sort of a facilitator, somebody to help organize and specifically design this family constitution so that it spells out, how the wealth is to be used by the family members. What limitations there are on this wealth, how it's to be spent, how it's to be invested, how it's to be donated, because philanthropy is a big part of family offices and family families with affluence and wealth. They're very big on, in most cases, very big on philanthropy and charitable contributions. We need to make a decision, or they do, on who's going to make the decisions and how those decisions get made. How the family members can provide input or impact that decision-making around the distribution and use of the wealth, how the family members are to perpetuate the family values. That's very important in some families. They want to make sure that their values and what built this family wealth are continued on. So in general, you want to outline who is defined as family, who's part of this family and constitution. You want to identify the ideology of the family, spells out what this family stands for. Also, again, back to carrying on different values and objectives. And of course, the reasons for staying together. Why in the world do they want to stay together? There's many reasons they want to stay together. That needs to be outlined also in that constitution.
Who from the family, Vince, should be involved in these conversations about building this family constitution or establishing it?
Well, I think that's part of the initial meeting, is who are going to be the key decision makers.
Yeah.
Because you need to get a consensus among all the family members about, all right, somebody has to be the key decision makers here. And typically that's going to be members of the family who created the wealth in the first place, if they're still active. Excuse me.
If you're, by the way, just to jump in real quick, if you are watching this as a live feed, or maybe even later on here on Facebook, like this page and share this conversation with somebody that you think could benefit from it, or somebody that you think would have an interest in it. We sure do appreciate your feedback and your comments as well. And we appreciate your taking a look at it. And my partner there is Vince Annibals, the founder and CEO of VFO Advisory Group. And we're talking about family constitutions today. How formal should these constitutions be? I mean, I have this vision in my head of the Constitution of the United States, Vince, and we're all familiar with it. We've seen it, and some of us have been to Washington, D.C. and seen a copy of it. I guess the real version is like down in this silo, down deep and under the catacombs of the Capitol building. But how formal should our family constitutions be? I mean, are they actual legal documents, or more like just really recommendations?
No, it is a formal written document, but it is not a legal document. It's okay. Going to be written out and provide the guidelines on how this family needs to look at their business, if they happen to own a business together, or whatever issues may come up in advance of those issues coming up. They need to be able to define some of the guidelines on how to deal with some of these issues that come up, and get everybody together to try to get some agreement in the formation of this written document, which is then going to provide them the ability to go back when issues come up, have a written document, and everybody can sit down and look at that and say, well, this is what we agreed on, so this is how we ought to be handling this, and take them there. But it is not a legal document per se. They may ask a family attorney, though, to help them with putting that together.
Is there any other advice, Vince, that you have in order to kind of help make sure that a family constitution, you know, remains relevant over the years and is adhered to by everybody involved in drafting that?
I think the most important thing is that as the family expands and it grows and the wealth expands and grows and other major decisions may be coming up on how to deal with certain issues, that this Constitution is not viewed as one and done, so to speak. Yeah. It's static. Things continue to change, and they need to continually address whatever's in that constitutional document and issues that may come up that were not identified necessarily in that document. So you want to continually be monitoring issues within the family and have their occasional family meetings a couple of times a year. They want to have everybody getting along, if you will, as long as they can, especially when they start having younger generation join in. Their way of looking at things might be totally different and probably will be compared to the original founders or creators of the wealth or whoever the senior members of this family are today.
You talked about just a second ago, Vince, about while the document is not a legal document in and of itself, that you would advise that maybe having an attorney stand by, the family's attorney stand by, to just kind of look over everything and ensure that everything is on the up and up and that certain things are not forgotten or left out of that is kind of a good idea. Who else can families turn to with help in all of this? I mean, from the very beginning, the process of identifying their values and common concerns that they might have to creating the document itself?
Well, there are what is referred to as facilitators that can address the specific issues, whether they be charitable, whether they be other financial issues, whether they be issues about disbursement of funds. Whatever it might be, there are facilitators that can help organize and put together and draft this document. Another issue that comes up is social and economic and political types of differences within a family, mm-hmm. which can make that financial part a little bit more complicated. So a neutral third-party facilitator is highly recommended. Because you want somebody that can come in there and help keep everybody from scratching everybody else's eyeballs out when they all get mad and sit down and have a meeting and everybody's upset, and to bring them back to what this document's supposed to look like and get some agreement.
So let's go ahead then, Vince. I mean, it's a good place to probably pause and just kind of break everything down, if you could, just kind of on the bottom line. How would you sum up the key reasons for considering a family constitution where people's lives in terms of their wealth management, their long-term wealth management needs of significant assets are concerned?
Allergies. Number one, memorialize the family's principles and values. That's always very important. And a great way to do that is by using this family constitution. You want to have checks and balances in there, just like we have Congress, etc. So you want to make sure that different interests are being looked at. You've got checks and balances as well as ways to address conflict. You've got agreement on how they ought to be communicating when issues come up within the family. You want to promote accountability from all family members. You want everybody to respect one another and be accountable. Follow through with their word. Remember the original agreements that may have been made and written down, and don't try to change the deal after it is not exactly looking like it's favoring your particular situation. And just make sure it's set up so that families can be flexible to how the document is set up. Everybody's, remember, it's family. Got to try to get everybody to just simply work together to hold together what has been created by other family members.
Yeah, and you know, Vince, it sounds, we know that maybe we're making it sound a little simplistic. But, you know, if there are tensions, I guess, within the family to begin with, and for whatever number of reasons or variety of reasons there are, a family constitution, being able to sit down, first have those initial conversations, and then take it a step further in introducing some of those key individuals to kind of help out, including your wealth manager, VFO wealth manager in this particular case, is so important. And for people who may be watching this, Vince, for the very first time, watching this live feed, Secrets of the Super Rich, I think it's really important, maybe just real quick, to kind of reinforce the fact that those up and coming wealthy families, maybe you don't have $150 million or $250 million that a single family office family or individual might have. But if you've got $1 million, $2 million, or maybe even just short of that, Vince, it's really important that we can take some of these lessons learned by some of the super rich and ultra rich families out there, that we can apply them to our own situations, can't we?
Absolutely. Keep in mind that those people probably, unless it's an inheritance situation, they probably started a business, they had no money, all of a sudden created a significant amount of wealth, and now they're super rich. And we can learn lessons from what they did along the way. And also, very important to learn the lessons. What do they do today to protect their wealth, right, and to ensure it's growing and to make sure that there is a good foundation there? We can learn a lot from the people who have a lot of money, since many people, that's what their goal is to create their business and have it grow and create a large family business and wealth and affluence.
Yeah, that's right. And this stuff doesn't happen, in other words, by accident. There's careful planning here and lessons learned along the way, and we can learn from their mistakes as well. And Vince, again, as always, I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. We had another great talk today and really do appreciate it. Enjoy the springtime in Scottsdale and everything you got going on, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next month.
You got it. See you next month, Jeff.
Get started on your journey to discovering the difference that elite level wealth management can make by learning more about what a virtual family office is and some of the advantages to having one. Again, you don't need to be ultra rich or super rich to benefit from a virtual family office. We call them VFOs for short. And to do that, to get started on this discovery process, all you have to do is visit VFOAG.com. Again, VFOAG.com. There's a short video there that kind of explains how it works and why it's different from other types of wealth management that you may already be familiar with. And you can also sign up to receive a number of different things, including we've got a white paper and an ebook, both of them called Your Optimal Financial World. The ebook goes into a little greater depth, but they're both yours free with our compliments just for stopping by. All you have to do is go down to the bottom of that landing page at VFOAG.com, sign up. You don't have to give a bunch of information, just I think it's your name and your email address. And also by doing that, you are qualified or eligible to get, if you wish, a financial stress test, stress testing your wealth to find out if a VFO is right for you. Again, the website is VFOAG.com. Again, if you watch this on Facebook, like it, share it, let us know how you feel about it. We'd love to see you back again next month. My name is Jeff, and for Vince Annable, we appreciate you once again watching, and we're looking forward to seeing you again next time. So until then, take care, and thanks again.